James Hamm, for those who are watching the show on ESPN 1320 TV. Saw James Hamm in here. He's getting himself together as we're
rushed in from practice like a champ.
Rushed in from practice, man. That's why he's one of them ones. He's one of them ones, man. James Hamm. We were James. We were talking as I'll pull you up on the screen. We were talking about the footage from Saturday, where Keegan, the one everybody had was Kings get a stop, Fox is in transition, kicks it to Keegan Murray, hits a transition three, then comes back down, gets a steal, goes coast to coast, dishes, all this other stuff. And a lot of people were excited by that. You know, it's a training camp video, it's whatever. But one of the things I hope that was a sign of was Keegan Murray being a little bit more sure of himself as an NBA player, and not just an NBA player, but a top flight guy on a team like the Kings. From the things that you've heard and comments and talking to people and even some that you've seen, do you see a shift in mentality for Keegan in this third year?
Yeah, I think where we're at with Keegan is he's got to the point, we've seen a little bit with Fox too, where they just start to feel more comfortable in their skin and who they are as a player and what their place is in the league. I mean, I think it, like, people should understand, look how many top five busts there are every year, every other year. I mean, we talked about it the other day, like the 2017 draft with De'Aaron Fox at number five, right? Markelle Fultz is not in the NBA right now.
It's crazy.
Josh Jackson at four as well.
Yeah, Josh Jackson at number four is no longer in the NBA. The number two pick is Lonzo Ball, who's hanging on by a thread, who's had injuries forever. You look at the top 10, Frank Ntilikina, Dennis Smith is barely hanging on in the league. Like, that is the league. And I know he's a top four pick and, you know, he's had like a good start, but I think there's always that little bit of doubt in players' minds about who they are and where they are in a franchise and what they mean and all that. Mm-hmm. And it's just tough to shake. And so when you get that second contract, which will come next summer for him, that's when you know you've made it and that you're not going anywhere and you're solidified yourself in the league. And not only that, but you've solidified yourself as like a multimillionaire for you and your family and like three generations of family if you play it right. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there's always sort of this coming into the league and trying to figure out who you are. And for Keegan, being a quiet guy, I still think he's still finding his voice and who he is. And I think every year the Kings ask him to be something different. Mm-hmm. You know, last year they asked him to be more rangy, to defend more positions. Hey, we just got done with a playoff series against Golden State Warriors where you guarded Steph Curry the whole time. Mm. Now this season, they've asked him to bulk up. They added DeMar DeRozan. He's going to play the four. DeMar's going to play the three. And not only that, but they've added Keon Ellis to the starting lineup, at least for right now, mm-hmm. which means he might not have to go out and defend these guys on the perimeter like he did last year. Now it's like, hey, man, we're going to need you to go defend LeBron James and Kevin Durant. So I think in the meantime, he's just kind of figuring out who he is and trying to be more confident. He hears all of it from his teammates. He hears all of it from the media about how he's not aggressive enough sometimes and these things. But I do think it's there. You know, it's not naturally who he is to put himself out there. Mm-hmm. And he's slowly doing it. And this is kind of the process of becoming a really good pro. And so I think he'll be just fine. And I love what we've seen from him so far. Plus, like, look, he just keeps morphing his body. I mean, he is big. Like, he looks like he hit the weight room like really hard all summer because he knew he was going to have to defend power forwards and at least switch onto, bigger small forwards. Mm-hmm. Like, he knew that coming in. So I expect him to be able to defend a Kyle Kuzma one night and, you know, a Brandon Ingram one night. But then there's also going to be nights where he's got to defend Zion Williamson because you ain't got nobody else. And so it is what it is. He's got to take on the role of who he was last season, but also who Harrison Barnes was to this team a little bit too. So I'm excited to see what it looks like on the court. And I think he's going to have unlimited open shots because of the attention that everyone else draws.
What do you think they're kind of expecting out of him, like, for as far as like his development process? Because before DeMar got here, it was always like Keegan's going to be the third guy and all that. But now DeMar is here and he's kind of going to fill that role. So like, what are they expecting from Keegan going forward?
Yeah, I think Keegan, I think DeMar bought you a year at least, maybe two, of Keegan Murray sort of developing at his own pace as opposed to forcing him into something. And I think if you really look at young players in the NBA, especially guys like Keegan, they come into the league and they're not like true playmakers for others. They're not passers so much. And they're always trying to get sort of like pushed and to like shoot more and all that. There's going to come a point where I think his game develops and he becomes more of a natural playmaker for others. And I think that's where DeMar, bringing in DeMar really did buy you a year or two of him becoming more of a complete player, of just buying time. And so I think Keegan is going to be one of those guys that you hit 25, 26 years old, and all of a sudden he's going to take a big jump that people are like, oh, we kind of thought you had topped out. But it's going to be, Domas getting a little bit older, De'Aaron getting a little bit older, and DeMar maybe getting older and maybe not even being there. And that's when you'll fully see like a realized Keegan. But at that point, it will be like the jump will be from like 18 to 22 points a game or something. Mm-hmm. It won't have to be this monstrous leap that everyone keeps waiting for. He doesn't have to be the savior. And I think that's a big deal because you worry that his personality type, he's never going to feel that he's a savior type thing. And if you needed him to be that, it would have been really tough for him to like, I think for him to realize it today. Mm-hmm. 2 years from now, maybe. Like when he's a little bit more mature and he's really established as like a, close to all-star level or all-star level player, mm-hmm. I think he'll be just fine.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about how, he put on a little muscle to possibly play more at the four. I'm maybe in the minority. I don't know. I would like to know what you think, James. I feel like that's his position. I know a lot of people have tried to say, he could be a three and things of that nature. But I think where he's best is at that stretch four position and his ability to be a stretch four for a guy like Sabonis in that offense and be a matchup problem for fours because he does have some wing player skills. And I think that's like that. That's where he should be. Do you think the Kings view it that way? Or is this just because like DeMar's here and they've got this log jam starting wise, at least on the wing position, that they're having him more at the four?
I think coming into the league, I believed he was a four that could play three. Mm-hmm. And then he went and completely changed his body, like his mechanics, everything. He was so much more fluid. So much stronger, but leaner last year. And so I started looking at him as a three that could play the four. Mm. And I even looked at him as a player who, like, if there was some weird situation where, let's say you would have kept Kevin Herter, you would have kept Harrison Barnes and traded Kevin Herter and went out and got a player like Kyle Kuzma, I think in that situation, you probably could have even played Keegan as, like, a really big two. And so I don't want to like just put him in one box and say this is who he is, because I think we get too quick to do that with players, and especially young players. Like for right now, who he's going to have to be is a player who guards up. But there is a possibility the Kings go out and get a player that's bigger than him, stronger than him, and more capable of defending a player like Zion or a player like LeBron. And then you're going to need him to lean back down and be a three again. So I kind of like the ability for him to play multiple positions. And I think the whole Kings roster is kind of that way. Fox can play the one, the two. Monk can play the one, the two. Herter can play the two, the three. You just keep going up and down the list. And, Trey Lyles can play the four and the five. I think DeMar DeRozan can play the two, the three, and the four. It's just kind of like who he is at this point in his career. So that roster versatility and having a guy like Keegan that maybe can bounce back and forth between multiple positions throughout his career, mm-hmm. it's not a bad thing.
Yeah. How aggressive do you guys think he needs to be this season, like offensively? Like, he's going to be taking a certain amount of shots every game, or is it kind of like whoever it falls on that day for the Kings?
Well, did you answer that first, James?
Yeah, I would love for him to be like super, super aggressive, but at the same time, I'm not sure that you need it. Mm. I think that there are going to be games where you need him to shine. And I think there are going to be games where he hits eight threes without any question. I think there's going to be those games because I think all the attention that Fox draws is going to help him. But I also think this two-man game that they're working on with Sabonis and DeMar DeRozan, like the off-ball shooters in that set, they're going to have so many opportunities. Keon Ellis, Keegan will have those things. And also, I'd point out too, like if you go back to who Keegan was as a college player, right? Keegan was like strictly a, I mean, he shot threes, but then he was a low post guy. He was like 98 percentile in the NCAA as far as scoring in the post. We've not seen any of that from him as a pro. And the Kings are going to do, I'll warn people, the Kings are going to do a whole lot more crashing of the glass this season. We've heard a lot of it throughout camp. The advanced metrics say that teams that are crashing the offensive glass aren't actually getting back nearly as much as you would think, because there's a lot more deflections. Like the play gets delayed even if you don't get the rebound. And so the offensive boards, you're going to see this team fly in and grabbing all, or at least trying to grab a bunch of offensive rebounds to get more possessions. Their goal is to get around three more possessions per game. And if they can do that, they think that they'll push the pace for sure, but also that they'll just have more opportunity. They won't have to be as efficient offensively as if they're just, you know, like doing what they did last year. Keegan Murray is a huge part of that. Keegan Murray is a guy that easily could go from, you know, 5 point whatever rebounds per game right now to like 7.5 rebounds per game. Mm-hmm. He averaged a lot more. I think he averaged over 8 a game in college. I didn't think the rebounding would translate all that well to the pros, because a lot of it was just like his blocks were all things that weren't translatable from the college game to the pro game. You know, him standing in the key as a weak side shot blocker waiting for someone to come from the other side and getting a block on somebody that wasn't aware that he was there. Mm-hmm. But the rebound numbers, I think he can actually improve himself if he takes it serious with being a like sort of rebounding threat. You know, last year he averaged 1.4 rebounds per game on the offensive side of the ball and 5.5 for overall. Mm-hmm. I think that that's one of those pieces where you could see him take a huge leap. And with getting those offensive rebounds, I think we'll see him be able to score in the post a lot more, or at least be around the basket more for putbacks and stuff like that. There's going to be unlimited opportunity for these guys. You know, it is an offense that likes to share the ball. And one more thing I wanted to add, when we were talking about Keegan as a passer, 1.2 assists per game as a rookie, 1.7 as a second year player. DeMar DeRozan averaged 0.7 assists as a rookie and 1.8 as a second year player. And then 2, and then 2.5. And then for the most part, he's been around 5 a game for the rest of his career. That's kind of the natural progression of a scorer to come into the league and like really focus on being a scorer and getting comfortable first, and then start to set up other players around him. And I think we'll see, I don't know if we'll see the complete similar path to DeRozan, but I do think that he's a high basketball IQ player. We're going to see those assist numbers go up, climb as he gets deeper and deeper into his career.
Yeah. Real quick. Mike's mentioned before, like they want to get back to the pace of the first year and all that. How much of their issues off, like, do you think they're going to try and get back to the team they were more that first year with Mike offensively rather than, like, the issues they were trying to figure out last year? Because, like, last year you were talking about Kenny last season that, like, you need to get back to, like, your superpower or whatever.
Right.
Like, we're going to see him kind of just get back to that more offensively and focus that way a little bit more?
Well, I think Mike is always going to be a defensive-minded coach. Mm-hmm. But I also think that they believe they figured out a technical issue that they had as a team about how they were teaching them to defend the 3-point shot, right? And you know, they really wanted to show high, run in and get in close to space and get into people's body, hand in the face, right? As they progressed through the season, they started doing the high five play, which is something that we've seen from other players, from other teams around the league. And the team believes that a lot of the reason why their defensive numbers on guarding the 3-point shot started to drop because of that play. So I think that they believe that they're going to be a solid defensive team because they fixed a couple of things. They got way better last year for sure than they were the year before. But then on top of that, as the season progressed, they dropped from like number 15 or number 18 team. And in the post All-Star break, they're like number 8 in the league in defensive rating. So I think they still are going to rely on their defense at least partially. And I think, you know, having a guy like Keon Ellis is going to help that in the starting lineup as far as like opening night in the first couple of weeks, whatever. We'll see how long that lasts. But I also think like what you're saying, the pace thing, they just know like, what are we doing here? You know, I think we can all say there is nothing more frustrating than driving 68 miles an hour on the freeway in the fast lane following a Corvette.
Yeah.
You just want to punch somebody and
Jesus.
You're just like,
oh, James is right.
You understand what I'm saying? Yeah, the whole time you're just so frustrated. And I think that that's what a lot of people think like last season was a little bit for Fox. Like you can't have a guy who's that fast and that good at pace of play and then kind of put a restrictor plate on him and not let him go fast. And I think that they believe that first year, that's what drove everything was the pace of play, not only just getting out and running, but also the pace within the half court set, moving the ball quicker, being quicker with your thoughts. And, you know, so I think that they're going to try to play faster, but we're going to have to wait and see.
What does that look like, though, right? Because we used to talk about this with Luke Walton. And I didn't know for sure, but I was like, I'm pretty sure Luke Walton is not telling them to walk the ball up the court. Like, they got free autonomy to do whatever they want to do as far as pushing the ball up the floor, but it just didn't work out. Was last year one of those things where they were saying, like, hey, let's walk it up a little bit more? Is that what happened with the pace? Like, what's the difference between how they approach offense this year as opposed to last year as opposed to 2 years ago?
Yeah, it's interesting because if we go back to, like, I'd even like to go back to Dave Yeager. So we had the Dave Yeager year where he just, like, says, okay, we can't do anything but run, so we're going to put on a running clinic. We're going to sprint from start to finish every single game. And then when they let go of Dave and they brought in Luke, I know a lot of people, like, they thought, okay, well, this is Vladdy's buddy and he's trying to, you know, bring in Luke. Like, we talked about how fast the team was under Dave Yeager in that final year. They finished fourth in the league in pace, and Luke finished number one with the Lakers. Like, Luke was a guy who pushed the tempo. He had come from the Steve Kerr system and, like, push. When, you know, you try to implement that as a new coach, sometimes they listen, sometimes they don't. And, you know, sometimes the lingo changes and they're trying to figure out everything. And then just as they started to get good in his first season, the pandemic hit and all things went sideways. And so I don't really think we ever got to see what the continuation of what Luke Walton's type of offense, the second year of Luke Walton, they decided not to retain Bogdan Bogdanovic and just, like, they didn't even try in free agency. And you went in with like four guys who could play basketball on your team that could play a fast paced system. And that was a problem. And so what they're doing now, I think the way that they played with speed within the offense was very different than the way Yeager or Luke wanted to do it. Because if you remember, the Dave Yeager thing was, it doesn't matter if they make it or they miss it. If they make a shot, I want you grabbing the ball, jumping out of bounds, throwing it in, and we're back to the other end of the court right now, right? That's something that I don't think that they're going to go to. It's not going to be like, oh my gosh, sense of urgency, running, running, running. But what they will do is they'll push a tempo when they can. And I think the other piece that we've heard is that they're going to look ahead as opposed to De'Aaron and Domas grabbing the ball and breaking naturally. They're going to do that, but they're going to be looking ahead for passes up like the outlet pass, which is something I don't think this team has really taken advantage of. You know, like I've said for years, I don't love him as a player anymore, but if you could ever have gotten Kevin Love with De'Aaron Fox on the same court, and the way that he looks ahead and fires a ball to a runner, the way that Jokic does it, you would have like gold because Fox is so fast and some of their other players are so fast at pushing the tempo. So I think they are going to push the tempo, but I don't think it's going to be this frenetic, like go out of your way to be crazy. And that's a lot because you have DeMar DeRozan, a lot because you have a very strong offense that can probably score on anyone in the league. Mm-hmm.
How much of a focal point do you think DeMar is going to be in this offense? Because like he's 24 points per game last year, like leading the Bulls offense and all. I'm not saying he's going to do that for the Kings this year, but like, is he kind of going to have his own free reign where it's like after Fox, like DeMar can get his shots? Or is it more so like play within the offense and all that?
I think is going to be play within the offense. But then the sets we'll see from him and Domas. And even, you know, like as we get through the season, it won't just be him and Domas. We'll see other sets that develop that start to have these personalities. I don't think he's going to average 24 a game. I don't think he's going to shoot 17 times a game. And adding to the 17 shot attempts per game, I don't think he's going to get 8 free throw attempts per game. Because if you start doing the math there on how many actual possessions he's taking a shot or getting to the line, you're looking at 21, 22, 23 times, you know, that he's actually the offensive player. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to see that, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was 15. I wouldn't be surprised if it was 6 assists per game. You know, I mean, six free throws per game. I think he is going to be a pretty large part of what they're doing at every moment. Mm-hmm. But again, this is like it's a freewheeling, everybody gets to eat offense. And I don't think that they're going to do nearly as much ISO until they have to, you know?
Yeah. I think they can be a devastating ISO team. And then we know the ball movement is going to be a staple of what they do. But this is why I think they're going to be so potent offensively, is they can play both ways. If you want the ball to move and crisp, they got the players and the system to be able to do that. But when times are there, when I need somebody to go give me a bucket, you got to work one-on-one, DeMar. You got to work one-on-one, De'Aaron. You got to work one-on-one, Malik. They're going to be able to do that too. And like you mentioned earlier when we started this whole conversation, you got Keegan Murray. Who knows what he might have developed as a post player? Who knows what, you know, roots he might have got back to with being able to, if he has an advantage in the post, being able to drop step, jump hook, or something like that. He may have that ability as well now too. So I just think they potentially – have a lot of different ways that they can score, which is going to make them such a potent offense.
Yeah, I think not only do they have a lot of ways that they can score, but they have a lot of different people that can score. You know, like it's one thing if you're doing the same thing again and again and you're always, you know, the DHO. If you can DHO teams to death, but at some point someone's going to make an adjustment. They're going to try to take things away. I think, you know, again, Domantas Sabonis is going to be asked to take 3 to 5 3-point shots per game this season. I don't know if he can hold up at 3 a game. I certainly don't think he'll take 5. But I also think DeMar DeRozan is going to be asked to take a few more threes than he has in previous years. He might get up to 4 threes a game. And you're going to want to, you know, temper like whatever the shot attempts with how their field goal percentage is on those attempts. And if you need to pull back a little bit, that's one thing. But I think that, you know, whether it's those two, whether it's Fox, whether it's Monk, whether it's Keegan, whether it's Kevin Huerter, whether it's Trey Lyles, you just have so many offensive options, and you get to a point where, you know, 5 or 6 guys could go for 30 at any moment, and then you got another, you know, 2 or 3 guys that can drop 20. That's pretty substantial. You know, the when that happens, it means that it makes you virtually impossible to game plan for.
Right.
And that's what the hope is, that you're able to build something that opposing teams are looking at, like, how are we going to stop Sabonis? How are we going to stop Fox? How are we going to stop DeMar? And then once we stop those guys, how are we going to keep Keegan Murray from busting us for 7 threes or Keon Ellis from hitting 5 threes? You know, how are you going to stop that from happening? And it just, they're going to be really tough to defend. I don't think they're going to have to try really hard to be a top 5 offense.
Mm. Yeah, I wonder how many...
matter of fact, let's hold that real quick. We're going to step out real quick. When we come back, we'll hear what Jesse's going to have to say. I want to ask you about them being back at practice today after having their first day off and how that looked. And there's a couple other things injury-wise that I want to catch up on as well, man. So we got James Hamm of the Insiders, of the Kings Beat, joining D'Lo and KC. No D'Lo today. It's KC and my man JT and my man Joe Brazil on ESPN 1320, Sacramento's number one spot for your sports. Let's get it. D'Lo and KC back here on ESPN 1320. I don't know how this works, Jesse. I missed it 2 times already. I don't want to miss it again. So I'm just going to say it, and I don't even know if it's going to have the same effect, but you're listening to ESPN 1320, KFM West Sacramento on Odyssey Station. And D'Lo and KC is brought to you by Sky River Casino.
Yeah, you forgot. We'd never miss those.
Yeah, never. Never, 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 never. So, you know, I just want to make sure we get that in.
Casey's doubling down.
Make sure we get that in. We got James Hamm with us. He just got back from Sacramento Kings practice. Training camp is officially over. Is that what it is now? Training camp is over and this is practice? Is that how this goes?
Yeah, so training camp officially ended Saturday. And
I think that was like a week, right?
It's a very weird distinction what is training camp and what's not. So less Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 5 days of training camp. 5 days of training camp, they can have 2-a-days. Mm. It's really like the distinction that the NBA puts on what it is that we're hearing. It, like, that's why we call it training camp. And then today is just practice. It's still training camp. I mean, it's still the same guys. There's still 21 players. Like, they haven't made any cuts, so it's still the same thing.
I was about to say, like, if you brought guys in for, like, training camp invites or something like that, if training camp was over, wouldn't you have to make a move?
No. You don't have to make a move until you have to give a player, like, 48 hours to clear a waiver, so all the moves will be done, like, 2 days before the season starts. That's when the final moves have to be made. That doesn't mean that the Kings won't waive a player or two and then sign a player or two like in the last week. So they have this week before when preseason ends and then the regular season begins. There's a whole week off, I believe. And that's going to be one of those times where they kind of get healthy, they get back on the practice floor, they do all that stuff. But then right before the season starts, you've got to make your cuts. And you got to get down to 15 main roster players, three two-way players. And, you know, they might not keep 15. They might keep 14. You never know what they're going to do with their final roster. But if they don't keep 15, we ran into this last year. If they don't keep 15, there's a point where they have to have 15 players on the roster or they don't get to use the two-way players the same way. So as of right now, you have three two-way players, and each of them can play with the main club for as many as 50 games, right? 50, 50, 50. And each of those spots basically come with like 50 games. So if you trade, if you waive a two-way player, I believe if you pick up another two-way player, he might only have 28 games left that he can play with the main club or whatever. So those two ways are a little different. If you have 15 players, you get, so basically 150 games, 50 for each of those spots. If you only have 14, it drops to like 99 games. So you only get like 33 games per, and again, it's an accumulation of games. So, you know, the most a guy could play is 50, but that could mean the other two guys are only playing like 16 games each or something, or, you know, whatever it might be. So yeah, it's a little strange.
They control their own preseason schedule, right? As far as like scheduling it out and all that, the Kings?
Yeah, there's someone within the walls at his job.
Is there a reason why the first game is not till Wednesday? Like, is this to give the guys more run or... Because like the Clippers are playing their second game today, so I'm just curious.
Well, yeah, but the teams that are playing overseas or in different spots, a lot of those teams, they start like 4 or 5 days earlier than everybody else because they want to give them time to recover after all the travel.
Gotcha.
Which is what happened... The year the Kings went to India, they had the same thing.
I mean, that India trip was ramifications still being felt.
I think the India trip happened before I got to Sacramento, and we're still talking about the India trip.
Yeah.
Jesse, you had a question before we went to break. You remember it?
Oh, yeah. Like, as far as their core, like, we got Monk, Keegan, Fox, Sabonis, I think DeMar. Like, where do they stack up as far as, like, offensively, like, with the other teams in the league? Because their depth as far as, like, offensively, like you mentioned, that you can have anyone go off for 30 or a couple guys go off for 20. Like, where do you think that stacks up amongst the NBA? Because I feel like that's a big deal. The fact that they're just so, the depth that they have offensively.
Yeah, I think it is a big deal. And I think, like, as far as, like, 1 through 8, 1 through 9, I think they have a ton of scoring, right? Because you got to figure at this point, your three guys off the bench are... Like, if season were going to start today and everyone was healthy, if Keon Ellis is your starter, you got Monk, you've got Herter, you've got Lyles, and then you've got Lynn, who's not an offensive player. So basically, I think that they stack up really well, like 1 through 9, but I'm a little concerned how they stack up the rest of the way.
Gotcha.
And a lot of these guys are getting some way more experience right now than... any like 15, 16, 17, 18th guy would ever get. Even like we can, it's even more than that. It's like 15 through 21 at this point. These guys are, they're part of training camp and they're running and they're doing all that stuff and they're listening and they're doing some of the drills, but 5-on-5 and stuff like that, it's usually straight up. You're playing against maybe a couple of rotating pieces, but it's usually 10, 12 guys that are seeing the bulk of that. That's just not the case this year because you got four guys who probably would have been in your rotation that are just out. You know, like McLaughlin might be cleared. He's probably the closest to being back. Kevin Herter hasn't played at all. Trey Lyles hasn't played at all. Devin Carter hasn't played at all. And now you have Orlando Robinson on the bench as well. The one good thing we did here today, Mike Brown, he's been reluctant to really like single out a bunch of people and praise them.
You good, bro?
You dying over there?
I can't really
just
call.
Just do it on camera, bro. Like Dame says, if you're going to do it, die on camera.
I can't really cough because we're in the middle of James's answers and everything. So it's always these little mini coughs and they can't really go through it. But yeah, it's about the fourth or fifth time now.
I feel like
yeah,
he's I'm, over I'm there good. Eating I'm oysters
alive.
Or something.
I'm alive. I'm still alive. He's still alive.
Checking on you.
Yeah. I was saying that Mike has been reluctant to ever like single out like young players and really give them all that much praise. But he really talked about Isaac Jones today and said, yeah, he's just like, of all the young players who they're asking him to do the crash zone thing, right? That they watched the film from Saturday's scrimmage and he had 11 opportunities to crash the glass and he crashed on all 11 and actually came away with a couple of deflections and stuff. And on top of that, there was a point where he got a rebound, he sprayed it out, he ran to the corner and the ball found him and he hit a wide open three. And Mike said he hit five or six threes during the scrimmage part of the game. Mm-hmm. And I'm like 6 foot eight with like a 7'2", 7'3" wingspan that looks more like a leaper, a guy who's, you know, gonna block shots and finish on the Malik Monk drawn, you know, alley-oop type deal, but he's out there hitting threes and doing the things that they're asking him to do. So you never know. Maybe this opens a door for a player. You know, Mike said, you know, I say maybe a lot before I say yes. And he said, I've said maybe way too many times already. And so he's like, I'm not saying yes yet, but I've said maybe a lot. And so when it comes to who's like, taking advantage of this opportunity, it might be a guy like this who's on a two-way contract and maybe you got another, you know, Keon Ellis situation in, you know, 6 months from now.
Well, I think you guys talking about the insiders earlier too, just the fact if the Kings are able to maybe bring in a Keon Ellis type player maybe once a season or once every couple seasons, how much that'll help them and all that.
That's it, right? Like that's where, to a certain degree, where Monty came from in Houston. They were able to find a Daniel House or get a guy like PJ Tucker and turn him into
Montrezl Harrell.
I think was Capella, was he a high draft pick or did they kind of find him a little?
I think he was around 1920.
Okay.
Yeah, but maybe like between 19 like 24 I think in the draft.
Yeah, but that was one of the things that Maury did well in Houston, and that's where Monty learned under, is they would find these little random G League guys who would end up being rotational pieces and valuable pieces, because that's where you could kind of work the margins by finding guys like that and developing those guys. And if he can bring that type of precision to roster building to Sacramento, I think that'll bode really well.
Yeah, I mean, it's how you have to build a team now, because when you've got players making 40, 45 million bucks, I mean, there's a point where De'Aaron Fox is probably going to make 60 or 70 million a year, and Domantas Sabonis is going to make 50 here real quick, and then you also have your $25 million player and DeMar, and your 18, 19, 20 million dollar player and Malik, and $18 million for Kevin. Somebody has to make nothing. Somebody has to get completely.
Somebody has to live on Freeport.
Yes, somebody has to completely get killed here, and that's it. You have to have a pipeline. And if you don't, like, you run into trouble. I mean, look at the Denver Nuggets. Like, they have quietly lost these pieces time and time again. And initially, they had sort of the strength to backfill. Mm-hmm. No, they ran out of that. And now they're, you know, we're feeling it. You know, Christian Brown has to be great for them this year. And Watson has to be really, really good for them this year. That's not a good place to be in because, again, like all your high-end salaries, you have to have the guys. Keon Ellis is under contract for another, I think he's got 3 years left at league minimum. So, like, for every guy you have like that, or for Colby Jones that you're trying to bring along, like, you have to be able to develop talent like this. So when you are playing truly on the margins like that, it's like more like an Alex Len at $3.6 million, or, you know, it's those guys that you have to pay a little bit more because their league minimum salary is higher. But you still have to have these guys that make $1.2 million or $1.8 million, or your balance sheet is never going to be clear.
Yeah, for sure. Did you you talk to some of the guys today after practice? And, you know, they seem to enjoy that first day off after training camp was over and all the two-a-days and everything else like that. You talked about some of the injuries that are going on with Trey Lyles, Jordan McLaughlin now, or Orlando Robinson. The Orlando Robinson one is interesting. I thought he had an opportunity to make the roster and be maybe the third center or something like that, just because the Kings lack that type of size up front. Does this injury hurt his chances of being on the main roster, or is it just go to a G League thing? Like, how does that play out for him?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really, really interesting what they do here. First of all, he makes quite a bit of money. I mean, he got a $500,000 guarantee to show up to camp. That won't be fully guaranteed. His salary won't be fully guaranteed until January 8th or whatever. So the Kings have a big decision to make here, because in a perfect world, you can just wait out the injury, right? And just, okay, we've got Alex Len, we've got Trey Lyles, we've got the depth to withstand something like this. But that's not where the Kings are right now. You know, Trey Lyles isn't on the court, and he might not be on the court for opening night. Like, we don't know. I mean, from like the last 2 days of September, he was out. He won't be reevaluated for 3 weeks. The season starts on the 24th. So, and once he's reevaluated, that's when he starts playing 1v1, 3v3, 5v5, and gets built up. So you're probably looking maybe the first week of the season, maybe a little bit longer. And that's if everything goes well. So I think that there might be a position open here or two for someone to make this team that maybe would not have made it. And I don't know what that means, you know, because it's possible, like, if Isaac Jones is playing really well and you want him to play backup center, backup four for a couple of weeks, that's not an ideal situation. He's a two-way player that went undrafted. Mm-hmm. But it might be something that works. You just don't know, especially if we're talking like 4 minutes a half or something. But would you keep him up with the team? He's going to be up with the team no matter what, because the G League doesn't start until way after. You know, the G League draft is, I think, 2 days after all final cuts are made, and then they start assembling teams, and, you know, you got like a week or two before things crank up with the G League. Mm-hmm. So he'll probably be with the team either way, but would you feel more comfortable with him, or would you feel more comfortable with Scalabissiere, who 7-footer, who can block shots and played really well for a G League team last year, who knows exactly what the offensive sets are because he was already in your system last season? You know, what are you going to do with that? I don't know what this means for any of those guys. I'm not making any promises that Scal or that Terry Taylor or, you know, Broderick Thomas are going to make the team. But I do think that injuries could play a role into who you keep and who you don't here at the end, because you're going to need somebody. There could be a game where you need somebody to play. And you need to have more players than what you've got right now, which is a bit of a problem.
How often do you think we see those end of the bench guys? Do you think Mike's just going to shorten up the rotation this season where it's like kind of 1-8, 1-9?
I think once we start into the season, we're probably going to see 1-9, 1-10. Like, I don't think he'll go, you know, he's a guy who likes between an 8.5 and a 9.5 man rotation. And I think Jalen McDaniels will probably get a little bit of action early in the season. Again, I think it depends on where Trey is. It's going to depend on where Kevin Huerter is and how he's feeling physically. Jordan McLaughlin was, you know, up against it for minutes no matter what, just because Malik Monk is truly your backup point guard on this team. And the fact that he's missed a bunch of time, it's just unfortunate. But, you know, hopefully he gets back in and can play some preseason. Maybe he is a guy that you bring off the bench early in the season with Monk to play side by side. Yeah, I mean, there's too many moving pieces right now because of the injuries. And it's just like, for me, it's a little uncomfortable because I know that you want to test these guys against, you know, as much experience as high quality of talent as you can during the preseason and during training camp. And it's not, I'm not calling out anybody who, you know, I think isn't working hard or anything else, but you can't replace experience in the NBA. And you have all these guys that are, you know, sort of fighting for spots at the back end of the, at the back end of the roster or the two-way players. Like a lot of these players are G League players that they're, that the main roster, the main rotation is going up against every day in practice. And that's just because they're so beat up.
Mike Brown said today, I saw in one of your videos that he's going to have the starters. Everybody that's available is going to play on Wednesday. The starters might play about a half. Do you think the that may be one of the reasons why he has them playing a lot in that first half is because they haven't been able to go up against, no disrespect, but high-quality NBA guys in training camp due to the injuries?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think it's experienced NBA guys. I like, again, we're not trying to be disrespectful. They're, these guys, like a lot of them, they just need more time. Mm-hmm. Like, and there are probably a couple of them that are going to be back in the league without any question. And so you're kind of, if you're Mike, you have to use the first two or three preseason games very specifically as a buildup. Like, you got to get your guys out there against players that you're going to see in, you know, opening night. The Minnesota Timberwolves come through town. The last thing you want to do is not have like any real game action against other NBA talent, you know, NBA quality players or NBA experienced players. Yeah. And that's just really difficult. So I think we'll see the starters play not a ton in the first half, but like they'll play most of the first half, right? The starters, Malik Monk, Alex Len, you know, again, Jalen McDaniels will probably see some good action in the first half. But then after that, you always have to remember that some of these young guys, they're trying to make it. And we see it every year with the California Classic, or we see it with Summer League. The deeper you get into Summer League in Vegas, sort of the crazier it gets and the worse the basketball gets and the more you don't want to have your top tier talent that's going to be playing on your main roster, because that's when people get hurt, when guys are just trying so hard and trying to do everything they can, but they throw a caution to the wind and sometimes, you know, go up for a block or something that they shouldn't and hurt somebody. And so the same thing goes for preseason. You get to a certain point in the game, it's like, okay, we need to back off a little bit and let some guys play that are, you know, G League players and guys that are going to be, are fighting for a roster spot or whatever, but we're not going to have our top seven or eight guys, especially when you already got four guys on the IR.
I was checking this game. I was like, man, you know, I'm gonna watch this. Are they, Kings going to do their Kings.com thing again? I don't know if this thing got announced before, but maybe it just slipped my mind. But game's on ESPN.
National TV preseason Kings.
Yeah, yeah, this is
on ESPN.
ESPN, and Friday's game is NBA TV.
That's right. That's right. Now on Sunday, I go back to Kings.com/live.
Yeah.
Uncle V, just pay the money to get it on NBC California, please. But yeah, this game on Wednesday is on ESPN.
It's a lot of money and you never recoup any of it. I know.
I'll give him a dollar. Put the damn thing on NBC.
When Dan
California
gets back from Disneyland, we will ask him.
That's right. No, he's got things to buy. He's already scouting the 13-foot tall Jack.
Oh yeah, I heard that this mom on the insiders.
What's he got going on?
Oh, he's having a good time at Disneyland. He's falling in love with the Nightmare Before Christmas characters and stuff.
Yeah, Hammer said that he was talking about Dan's gonna have like the little decorations, the little life size ones or whatever that they got out there.
Yeah, is he a skeleton?
Yeah,
they make those things like you said, 13 feet.
I have a 13 foot tall one at home.
It's crazy. Yeah. That's actually kind of spooky.
It's pretty amazing. There, you look that's outside, and there are people that come by every single day with their little kids to see it. Like the same people come by. They're like little kids say we have to go back to their house every day, and they'll just be sitting out front watching our animated things go.
And you need to throw out a little bucket that says donations behind it. Oh, you'll be living.
Yeah, there it is.
Is it up right now?
I've built them except for the big one. The others I've built, I just haven't put them out yet.
All right.
I'm behind in my chores out front, like training camp oasis.
It's been too damn hot too.
And then Vegas, you know, Vegas, and then I got sick, and you know, yeah, kind of snowballed on me here. this last couple of weeks.
Here we are. Like I said, preseason week has started. So we're here.
Have they talked about like goals or expectations for themselves this season? Because like we talk about all the time, like, oh, we want the Kings to make playoffs or second round, this, this, and that. Like, have they talked about it for themselves?
I think DeMar said that he believes that this team can make it to the Western Conference Championship. And when you say the Western Conference Finals, when he said that, it was like, okay, no one else can say, well, I think DeMar's a little off. I think we're probably more like a second-round playoff team. We haven't seen that happen.
You got to ride with him at that point. Once one of the guys say, it's like, all right, well, that's who we can get to.
Imagine DeMontis Sabonis next day. Yeah, it's a bad take. Damn it, DeMar. I don't know.
You know what we haven't had is someone say, you know, come on, man. If you say we're going to make the Western Conference Finals, you probably should just say we're a championship caliber team, that we should be in the – and, you know, fighting for a finals bid. And, like, look, DeMar DeRozan, he's got to be feeling that way. Mm-hmm. He's on a two-year deal with a third-year team option and some guaranteed money there. But at the same time, like, look, 35 years old. Like, if you're not in this to try to win a championship right now, like, he's running out of time. And I expect him to be very motivated to do what it is that he's saying, at least try to get them as deep in the playoffs as they can.
Absolutely. Tying up a few loose ends here, the Tigers and the Guardians just finished their game. A three-run home run with two outs and two strikes in the ninth inning by, I don't know who did it, but Kerry somebody Carpenter. On the Tigers. Who was it?
Kerry Carpenter
with a big-time bomb to give Detroit the win to tie that series up at one. Yankees-Royals play tonight. Monday Night Football, it's tonight. Chiefs and Saints in Kansas City. Joe, you know if we got any of that? I know we don't have football.
We got baseball. Yeah, we got baseball
coming on after this.
Yankees and Royals. Yeah. So look, Yankees, handle business. You know, I guess I got three teams in the playoffs right now. I like the Yankees, I like the Padres, and I like the Mets.
Let's see if the Yankees will actually win something. It'll be interesting.
I mean, once again, that commentary wasn't necessary.
It's a fair point. I wonder if the Yankees, after spending all the money, will win something finally. It's been 15 years.
Actually, that was completely.
It's fine. I'm just tired of hearing about Mickey Mantle and all that, but whatever.
Well, you know, the Yankees should have won 54 championships by this point.
So I've heard.
According to Kenny.
Well, no, that's not the case. When it comes to the Niners, I tell you, there are times they shouldn't have won every time they were in the playoffs. But I tell you, there were situations where they didn't take care of business, and they could have had this or that. That's all it is.
Just messing with you.
That's all it is. I cannot tell a lie. I just say it as it is. I know this might not be one of them years. I'll tell you that for the Niners. I'll tell you that we gotta figure some things out, but we'll figure it all out together. We start tomorrow with the Insiders at 10 a.m. D'Lo is back for D'Lo and KC tomorrow. Jesse Tappy is back. Shout out to my man Joe doing his thing. And we're going to go out to baseball, man. And we will see you guys tomorrow. Vamos, Yankees!